Dogs by Nature's podcast, which has been affectionately called Dogcast by you, the listeners of Dogs by Nature. Today, we welcome in Anthony Cosenza of CincyJungle.com, our friends from down the dial. We don't hate them in the AFC North like we hate the others. And I have a feeling that we should probably hate each other a little more than we do right now. No?
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you a question. In the eyes of a Bengals fan, do you guys hate the Browns? Are we like your number one rival?
You know, historically, you'd probably say yes, and it should be that way. I think, unfortunately, the rivalry lost a little bit of luster from both sides in the 90s when the Bengals were just absolutely horrible. And then the Browns went away for a few years, came back, and they haven't really been the same ball club either since their return. So I think that kind of element over the past two decades or so has kind of tarnished the rivalry a little bit. But, I mean, historically, there's a lot of history there, obviously, and a lot of bad blood with, you know, Paul Brown, Art Modell, the whole thing. So we should hate each other. Hopefully in the next couple of years, this rivalry will kind of re-intensify a little bit.
And that's kind of the weird thing, you know, because it really pisses me off, to be totally honest with you, when Steeler fans say that their big rival is the Ravens. And so, you know, when you probably ask a Browns fan who's your number one rival, you're probably going to get the Steelers or the Ravens. So as a Bengals fan, I could see why that would kind of maybe, I don't know, it just bother you. Does it?
Yeah, it does a little bit. You know, the Steelers are just a very easy team for a lot of people to dislike.
Everybody hates the Steelers.
Just, and I think part of that has to do a little bit with, apologize to the Steeler fans who may be listening, but some of their fans can be quite aggressive, obnoxious, you know.
Drunk.
Adjective.
Yeah. Drunk, unable to read.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and say it, you won't.
Exactly. So, you know, they kind of make that team a little bit easy to dislike. And like I said, you know, they've obviously had their share of success over the past decade and a half, especially. So, you know, I think there's a little bit of envy there also.
Well, putting all that aside, let's talk about the game coming up on Sunday here. Browns, Bengals, we're both coming off losses, and you kind of look at the losses, they're kind of different. You know, what went wrong on Monday night?
Oh, boy, a lot of things. you know, the game actually wasn't as bad as it appeared to be. If you did watch the game, you know, the score was actually 17-13 Ravens in the middle of the third quarter. So the Bengals, you know, they fell behind pretty quick. They were down 10-0, and they slowly kind of climbed their way back into the game. And they were in it pretty late. But, you know, as you kind of saw, you know, the Ravens offense was pretty potent. They're running this new no huddle offense, which is making them a pretty scary team.
Yeah.
I think part of me kind of says, well, you know, the Bengals and their coaching staff should have been a bit better prepared. You know, they had months to prepare for this team, blah, blah, blah. But the other part of me is this is the first, the Bengals were kind of the guinea pig team that they rolled out that new offense with. So I don't know that a lot of teams knew exactly what to expect. Bengals secondary is a bit depleted right now. There's some age issues going on there with Nate Clements and Terrence Newman especially. Leon Hall probably isn't back to total 100% from his injury last year to the Achilles. And then they don't have their first overall pick, not overall, but first round pick from this year, Dre Kirkpatrick. He's nursing kind of a knee injury and rehabbing that. So, you know, I think that kind of hurt him on Monday night.
Now, you're talking about the defensive secondary. On the flip side, the Browns are going to be without Joe Hayden. Hayden versus A.J. Green is, in my money, one of the marquee matchups in football. It's going to be a little different. What kind of matchups are you guys kind of signaling out there?
Andrew Hawkins is the Bengals, basically. He's their new slot guy. They had Jordan Shipley since 2010. And Shipley, if you remember last year in the second game of the season, tore his knee up. I was out for the rest of the year, and I think they kind of rushed him back a little bit this year, but he just wasn't ready. Probably was more of a better candidate for the PUP list than actually being cut. But You know, Jay Gruden really liked what he saw from Andrew Hawkins. He brings a lot of speed, a lot of shiftiness. You know, there's a concern about his short stature. He's only about 5'7", I believe. But what that also does is on screens, he really can hide himself behind some of those pulling offensive linemen that you know, create a convoy ahead of him. And if you watched the game Monday night, you saw quite a few of those plays where he kind of hid himself behind those bigger guys and then kind of snuck past them for some big games. You know, he's a good little player. That is a matchup that the Browns are going to need to figure out something with, because, you know, he's quick, and I don't believe he has a touchdown in his 2 years in the NFL, speaking of Hawkins. But, you know, he definitely has the speed and the shiftiness to break a long one if he gets some room. Going back to Joe Hayden, as a Bengals fan and a writer for the Bengals site, I have a lot of respect for that guy. He's a great player, great talent, and in those two games against the Bengals last year, he pretty much you know, won most of those matchups with the exception of two big plays. One was kind of a tricky fluke play where they did a quick snap and caught the Browns defense napping in that first week. And then the second week was a deep ball across the middle that created the opportunity for the game-winning field goal. So I think the Browns, from my perspective, and you can expand on this, I think the Browns are going to miss Hayden deeply over the next few games. He was one of their brighter spots on that team. And, you know, I don't know how they're going to replace that, especially with a talented guy and A.J. Green across the field from them.
And that's the thing. You know, we as Browns fans were kind of confident in the cornerback position going into this year. But, you know, you lose a guy like Joe Hayden who can, you know, not I don't want to say erase A.J. Green, but definitely slow him down. Well, guess what? Without him, Sheldon Brown goes up against him. And I think Sheldon Brown's underrated at this point in his career because everyone throws dirt on him because he's 157 years old. But, you know, you have him elevated, then you move up Dmitri Patterson, and then Buster Skrin, and they're all taking on a guy who's just a little bit better than who they would be facing. And you're right. And to be honest with you, I'm scared to death of Hawkins in the open field. I saw him he was electric when he had the football. And it was almost like a different kind of speed, and he looked really good. So with that aspect, Skrin's fast, but he's more of – I hate to say this because, you know, I'm a fat white guy, but he's more of a straight line fast than a quick fast. And, you know, I don't mean that in a criticism in any sort of way, but if you guys can get Hawkins matched up on somebody in a one-on-one situation and everyone's got their eyeballs on A.J. Green, I don't think I'm the only Browns fan who's saying that scares me. Now, then you throw in the fact that Jermaine Gresham underneath is a big-time tight end that could give us problems. And for the love of God, up until last week, we've always struggled covering tight ends. And Scott Fujita looks like he may be back in the starting lineup again. And that dude's terrible covering tight ends. Terrible. So, I mean, is Gresham that big of an aspect of the, you know, Bengals offense? Yeah, you heard, you know, the first round draft pick coming out of Oklahoma. Kid's a monster. But maybe he's kind of flown a little bit under the radar in this kind of offense. Is this maybe something that Gruden's looking at changing coming out?
You know, Jermaine Gresham has to be, from a Bengals perspective, both for the coaches and the fans, has to be one of the most frustrating players on the roster.
A tease!
I think in 2010, you could say, when the Bengals had their old offensive coordinator, Bob Bratkowski, you could say, well, obviously, that was not really a tight end friendly offense, and you know, maybe they underutilized him a little bit. Bengals are now running the West Coast offense, where a tight end should be, you know, a real focal point in that offense. And you know, he had a decent year last year. Gresham did. He ended up making the Pro Bowl as like a second alternate because both of the Patriots players backed out of the Pro Bowl. But you know, you're still waiting for that wow season, that wow game. From him, we kind of had been waiting for him to assert himself as the number two receiving option in the offense because of the uncertainty across the field from A.J. Green with the number two wide receiver spot on the Bengals roster. You know, that they're kind of mixing and matching that situation there. You know, we keep waiting for Gresham to assert himself, and he's just, you know, he'll flash sometimes, and other times he'll completely disappear. And if you saw the game last Monday night, he had a terrible game. just a terrible game. He had a third down pass that would have basically gotten him a touchdown. He alligator armed the ball, and it kind of flew out of his hands off his fingertips and incomplete. Would have been a big play early on in the game. The Bengals had to settle for three. He had a couple other catches late in garbage time. He took a big hit from, I believe, Bernard Pollard, and just kind of, you know, he's much bigger than, yet he kind of flew back, and, you know, he kind of just basically looked soft for his size last week, which was kind of surprising. Now, I expect him to bounce back. I expect him to have a pretty good year this year. You mentioned that the Browns have trouble covering tight ends, and that's something the Bengals struggle with as well. And we can talk more about that if you'd like. But, you know, as for Gresham, I don't know who the Browns could have a good matchup with defensively for him, but I think at this point Gresham is a tiny bit overrated.
See, I almost threw him in the same category as, you know, a JerMichael Finley. You know, I watched that game with the mm-hmm. Packers and the Bears mm-hmm. last night, and you're like, dude, you should be so much better than he really is. And it's yeah. frustrating. And as a coaching staff, I can't imagine how frustrating it's got to be.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, when they drafted Gresham in 2010 in the first round, that was the first time that the team had ever used a first-round pick on a tight end before. So that in itself should not only tell you what they thought about him coming out of college, but that should also tell you, you know, how little the team has traditionally valued that position. I don't know. We, like I said, Bengal fans and the coaches are waiting for that wow season, that breakout type of year where you could put Gresham in the same stratosphere as the Antonio Gates and the two Patriots receivers, things like that. And unfortunately, he hasn't proven that yet. So, like you said, the Finley comparison is a great one. You know, all the talent in the world. You know, pretty good system that should be pretty friendly to him, and can't seem to get it done.
Well, and you mentioned it to us, you know, or you said earlier, you know, if you want to go back and touch about the Browns, the one thing that the Browns have lacked at linebacker, at least when it comes to covering tight ends, is athleticism. Chris Gokong is good for what he is. I mean, he's a cement head that'll fill a hole. And Scott Fujita is really kind of a smart guy, but his athletic tools leave you something to, well, I'll just say it. He sucks. He's slow and he's old. But we have some young guys that really played well last week. LJ Fort is an undrafted rookie, played out of his mind. Craig Robinson had two interceptions, I believe. I may have flipped that. You know, those guys were all over the field. So, but Fujita coming back looks like he may start this weekend. If that happens, I look for the Bengals to take advantage, and maybe Gresham, you know, gets back out of your doghouse, if you will, for this weekend.
Yeah, maybe. You know, it sounds like you got a couple of younger, even though I don't want to say they're totally unproven because they had, you know, maybe had a good game last week, but, you know, there's still 15 other games to play, so maybe you don't fully know what you're getting from those players yet. The Bengals linebacking core is kind of in a similar situation. I don't know if you've been reading any news today, but
yeah,
their starting linebacker, who actually was probably one of their best defensive players overall, Thomas Howard, is out for the year with a torn ACL. He played like 94% of the total snaps defensively last year for the Bengals. Just a very important player, and kind of out of the blue, he hurt himself at Thursday's practice, and unfortunately, it kind of snowballed from there. So it sounds like, speaking of undrafted rookie free agent linebackers, sounds like the Bengals will throw Vontaze Burfict out there, probably to start. I don't know exactly which linebacker spot he'll be thrown at. He's naturally a middle linebacker. And he, you know, I don't know if they're going to put him on the weak side where Howard played or if they're going to toss him towards the middle and just kind of switch guys around. But you guys are going to get to see him this weekend. He had a great preseason, lost some weight, and just really looked good all around. So hopefully he carries that on to the field. But the Bengals themselves aren't in the best situation at linebacker either. You know, the reason they shipped Keith Rivers to the Giants in a trade was because they felt that Howard was just a much better player and could give them exactly what they want. Now Howard's out for the year, and they don't have Rivers to fall back on. So not a very good situation.
It's kind of interesting that, you know, Burfitt's first start will be against the Browns. He was a huge controversial figure on Dogs by Nature. I mean, there's a lot of people that you like the big hits, like the intensity, like the attitude that he had, but then there's a lot of people who just think he's a complete dumbass. And, you know, when you watched him at Arizona State, he did a lot of dumbass things. And, you know, I'm not trying to be, you know, overreactionary or anything, but when you see it, that's all you can say. If he can ever harness those gifts, man, he could be an absolute beast back there.
Yeah, you know, I have the privilege of living in Southern California, where I get to watch a lot of Pac-12 football.
Oscar, I thought you said you're surrounded by dumbasses on a normal basis, so at least it's a little nicer, I guess.
Easy now, easy. I got to watch the last 2 years' games against Arizona State and USC between those two squads, and saw a lot of Vontaze Burfict. There were a lot of stupid plays, a lot of after the whistle penalties where he'd hit a guy late out of bounds or roughing quarterback penalties, things like that. But there were a lot of wild plays too. A lot of athletic talent. There are some decent instincts there, as a linebacker. But I think his biggest trait, and it's something frankly the Bengals need on their defense, is he's an attitude guy. He's a guy, and not meaning a poor attitude guy, but he brings an attitude of intensity to a defense, I think. And I think you saw a little bit of that in the preseason when he got some time to play, and he made some good plays this preseason. Few sacks, he had an interception, few passes defense. So, that was again in preseason against twos and threes. Let's see how he does against starters. If he does harness it, his talent, and stays away from the dumb penalties, I think he could be a real special player. But obviously, that's what caused him to fall in the first place.
Well, speaking of Bengals linebackers, Ray Maliuga. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that. Malauga, maybe leaving out a couple Ugas there.
Yeah.
Popped off at the mouth this week saying that Trent Richardson was nothing special. And be honest with you, from all the reports, Trent Richardson didn't like that comment. What do you think? I mean, is that kind of a interesting matchup there? Is Malauga pretty well equipped to handle him in the hole? Ask Kirk Coleman, popped his helmet off like a bottle top.
Yeah. Very dumb thing by Malauga. I think it's blown out of proportion a little bit. If you actually read the quote, he just kind of said, he actually complimented Richardson, and then he said, but last week he didn't really do anything special, blah, blah, blah. The main issue I have with it is if Malauga was coming off a huge game himself, or if the Bengals defense had a good showing last week, something like that where he could really say, hey, this is why I'm saying it. Malauga has been another guy like Jermaine Gresham, who's been an underachiever. High expectations there. Last year, he finally moved into the middle linebacker spot. He played well the first part of the year, got injured, and he wasn't the same guy towards the end of the year. There's still a whole slew of missed tackles, bad angles. Just not what you'd expect out of that guy coming out of USC, because he was a monster in college. And, I don't know exactly what's not translating there. I don't think he should have done that. Add fuel to the fire. Maybe it's to motivate himself and motivate the defensive unit after a pretty poor performance against the Ravens. I don't know. I respect Trent Richardson. I think he's a good player. I actually want to ask you, kind of your observations on what you saw from Richardson last week, because I didn't really get to watch that game. I kind of saw the stat line and obviously saw that big hit he put on the Eagles defender, but I kind of wanted your take on how you thought he looked last week.
Honestly, I think he looked hurt. I think his knee was a lot more hurt than people let on. He didn't have that explosion that you saw in college that made him quote-unquote special, unless you're Jim Brown. And I'll be honest with you, a big part of me is hoping that he was hurt, because if he wasn't hurt, we're in trouble. You saw a guy who was slow to the hole, didn't really hit the creases. There was a few times, and I'm one of the minority on Dogs by Nature who kind of thought the offensive line pretty much got whipped up front all game long, especially in the run defense. And you got to give a lot of credit to the Eagles, and that was a horrible run defense last year, and they really took it to the Browns. So I'm hoping that he was just a lot more banged up than we thought, because Brandon Jackson came in and looked better. We didn't see Montario Hardesty at all, didn't play a single snap, and, you know, at least he didn't get hurt. But, you know, I think this upcoming week you're going to see a little bit different of a Trent Richardson, and the Browns fan in me is really hoping that that's true. But and let me ask, you know, sticking with running backs here, you guys had a guy who, I'll be honest with you, I didn't think Ben Jarvis Green Ellis was anything special, but he looked really legit against the Ravens on Monday night.
Yeah, I was very pleasantly surprised with him. And it wasn't even just him. It was the interior of the offensive line as well. If you remember last year, there were, and I don't know how close of attention you paid the Bengals outside of those two games a year, but, you know, there were a lot of instances last year where Cedric Benson and the offensive line couldn't get the necessary short yardage that they needed, whether it be on a third and one, a third and goal, whatever it was. It ended up turning a lot of potential seven-point drives into three-point drives or punts. And it's a huge thing that they wanted to work on this offseason. That's why they invested the high pick in Kevin Zeitler, who's now their starting right guard. He's a rookie from Wisconsin. That's why they, you know, brought in, who unfortunately got hurt in the first preseason game, but Travell Wharton at the left guard spot. You know, they really, really wanted to make sure that they could shore that up. And then as well, they shipped Benson, or opted to not re-sign him, and brought in Green Ellis. And, you know, Green Ellis isn't the guy who's going to run away from anybody on a defense, but he's a guy who'll get you those tough yards. He'll lower his head, and he'll always fall forward. And, you know, that's the reputation he came to Cincinnati with from New England, and that's what he proved the other night in Baltimore. There was a couple attitude plays that I liked out of him. You know, there was a play I think it was a third and short that was a really big play early on. He lowered his shoulder, got through the line, and then specifically sought out Ray Lewis and lowered his head into Ray's chest. And I like that because that's an attitude that offense needs. So if that trend continues, I could see him having a pretty good year, and hopefully it will lead to more points than what the Bengals were able to score last year.
And speaking of, you know, free agent, I mean, it's so rare for at least the Browns to be signing free agents, at least under Holmgren and Heckert. One of the guys we did bring in was a former Bengal in Frosty Rucker. Give us your impression of Frosty as a defensive lineman. Were you guys sad to see him go? What? Anything like that?
Well, before I do, correct me if I'm wrong. He had a pretty good week last week, didn't he?
You know what? He wasn't bad. The entire defensive line really played well against Philadelphia, which is a real pleasant surprise. You know, with us being out with Phil Taylor and whatnot, we kind of expected that to be a little bit of a shaky spot. But, yeah, they dominated up front of defensive tackles and ends, and Frosty Rucker was a big part of that.
And he's starting for you too, correct?
Yeah, he's going to start, and then on passing downs, we're actually been moving him in and bringing in Parker. Yeah, and I think that's a lot better fit for him because he's, you know, he's probably not the fastest guy in the world, but when you're mashed up against a guard, he can use that little bit of quickness, and he's still strong enough to hold up in there. So I think it adds another little element to that little pass rush up front.
Yeah, and that's similar to how the Bengals used him. He was never a starter here in Cincinnati. He was always a rotational guy. But, you know, that was one of defensive coordinator Mike Zimmer's key to his success on his units is, you know, a lot of rotating players in, keeping guys fresh and maximizing packages for certain players to shine in. And not to keep harping on the Ravens game, but I think that's part of what killed the Bengals defense in that game was that they didn't really have a lot of chance to substitute guys in and out because of the no huddle offense that they were facing. Speaking about Frosty Rucker, it sounds like the Browns are using him in a similar capacity as the Bengals used him. You know, he'd be a defensive end on certain obvious early passing downs. You know, third down pass rushing situation, he'd kind of kick inside and have other guys on the outside be their natural, play in their natural spots. So, you know, he was always a solid guy. He was always a good contributor. You know, he came out of college with a little bit of off-field baggage, but never really did anything to be frowned upon while in Cincinnati, and he was always a good teammate. Had a couple little injuries that nagged him throughout his career, but had a couple of good seasons, and, you know, I think Bengal fans were a little upset that he left or the team opted to kind of not re-sign him or lowball him, whatever the situation was. But he should be a good little player for you guys. I don't know that he's you know, all pro starting caliber player, but he'll contribute and he'll make some good plays, and I expect him to probably be pretty revved up this week as well as the next matchup against the Bengals.
Do Bengal fans hate Mike Brown?
That is a very good question. You know, I would say for a long, long time that yes. They did, especially there was, during the 2008 season, you really saw it. And during the 2010 season, you really saw it. And even going into the 2011 season, you know, the Bengals were one of the lowest attended, NFL teams, you know, in their home stadium. They had a numerous sellouts, strung together. I think it was 50 some games, that they sold out consecutively. That streak ended, and they struggled to sell out the stadium last year when they were on a playoff run. So I think Mike Brown has kind of given Marvin Lewis a little bit of, he'd never openly admit it, but he gave Marvin Lewis a little bit of power to, maybe do some things with the club that, normally wouldn't have been done in his previous time there. Namely, you know, a little bit more control over draft picks. Adding some more scouts to the staff, revamping the medical staff, just doing things a little bit differently that actually pretty much every other NFL team does.
You know, and the reason I asked is because I see almost like a parallel, and it's obviously across sports, so it is a little different with what's going on with the Cleveland Indians right now. I think you're seeing a fan base that just hates the ownership so much that they're taking it out on the on-field kind of aspect of everything, not showing up to games, booing, and all that kind of stuff. And as a fan or as a player, it's got to be tough, you know? And I understand some players have spoken out on it, but on the other flip side, you have to understand where the fans are coming from.
Yeah, and I think that Brown recognizes that, you know, that's, I think he started feeling a little bit in his pocketbook, and that's why some of these changes were being made, that were positive. Now, unfortunately, there's still a lot of things that are status quo with the Bengals and Mike Brown. The Bengals have the third most salary cap room, in the NFL currently, and this was a big, this free agent period, though, you don't always want to build your team solely on free agency, but this was a big opportunity for the team to really invest in some big guys, the Carl Nixes of the world, Ben Grubbs, you know, both of which were positions, both guys would have filled a position that they need. You know, there's some quality defensive talent, secondary talent out there. They could have used an established number two wide receiver. I mean, there was guys like Marcus Colston, Mario Manningham, all these guys are out there. And they're preferring to rely on rookies, you know, second-year guys or a guy like Brandon Tate who never really has amounted to too much in his 3 years in the NFL. So, I mean, coming off of a playoff year, it would have been a sight for sore eyes to see Mike Brown open up the pocketbook and really make some good decisions to really improve the team. Now, I mean, there's some good news like Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and some other guys that were brought in that were solid pickups, but they're never going to be splashy in free agency. They're never going to, you know, do things super unorthodox. He's a real conservative guy, and you know, it's frustrating for fans at times. But then you kind of see these you know, glimmer of hope moments where things kind of start to switch up in terms of the infrastructure of the team, and then you kind of go, well, maybe things are moving in a different direction, but. Unfortunately, there's just things under Mike Brown's reign that have occurred that, you know, both performance-wise by the team and treatment of fans and things like that, that just haven't been all that positive. And he's never endeared himself to the fans, even though they've, you know, done a pretty good job over the years of attending games and things like that. So, you know, I would say the relationship, this is my really long-winded way of saying it. I would say that the relationship is better than it has been, but it's still not a good relationship between Mike Brown and the fans.
Now let's flip the tables here. You know, I've been firing questions at you here all this whole time. What other questions do you have for me for the Browns?
I have a couple. The first is actually on a guy that was released, I believe, during final cuts, which was a surprise cut to me, and that's tight end Evan Moore.
Yep.
You know, he seemed to be a productive guy. I actually have a friend out here who is pretty good friends with him personally. So I've actually met Evan Moore before, and, you know, decent guy, good guy. You know, he's a big guy for sure. He's an athletic looking guy. You know, he had a couple big plays against the Bengals over the years, and I'm just kind of curious what Browns fans take were on, what the take was on that decision, and if they're missing him, that sort of thing.
Looks a lot better than he plays. It would be a kind of an easy way to put it. You know, you're right. He's tall. He's can run. You know, he's almost a wide receiver. He's born to play in the West Coast offense. But when a push came to shove, he was kind of a chicken. And, you know, I say that in the – he kind of alligator-armed a few in the end zone. Last year, I think – I forget who it was against, but Colt McCoy threw him up one in the end zone right under the goalposts, and he just didn't go get it. And at that point in time, I was like, you know what? This guy just doesn't have it. And they drafted Jordan Cameron a couple years ago from USC, a young athletic kid who we're hoping can kind of fill that role. And then you have Ben Watson, who's the old tried and true, who's definitely – yeah, running a little thin on the tread on the tires, but he's still, we got him for another year. And then Alex Smith, who I'm pretty sure has naked pictures of the entire Browns front office because he continues to get a job there. He's just another guy, but you know, he comes in, he blocks well, he catches it if you throw it to him, and he will fumble occasionally if you hand him the ball, which was a horrible play call for the Browns last year, but it lives in infamy, but yeah, long story short, he just wasn't one of the three best tight ends on the roster. Wish him luck in Seattle, but he didn't record a catch last week, and you know what? That's kind of what you're going to get out of the guy.
Mm. Talk to me about the wide receivers, if you can. I know that was kind of a sore spot, and kind of has been really since, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this observation, but really hasn't seemed to have too much luster there since that 1 year with Braylon Edwards. He had the one big statistical year. You know, you got obviously Josh Cribbs, who's, you know, an electrifying special teams guy and could do some things for you on offense. What's going on with the wide receiver core? I don't think you invested too many high picks in the position this year. How do they look so far?
No, you were right. The wide receivers suck. Edwards was fantastic in 07, but other than that, the wide receiver's position for the Browns has been terrible. They did use a supplemental second-round pick on Josh Gordon.
That's right, yep.
Is a kid who has the tools. He just needs to stop smoking weed. Big, strong, been kicked out of two schools, kind of, if you will. I don't know if what you want to call Utah, whatever. But has the tools. Huge. I mean, and even Joe Hayden said in, you know, mini camps and training camp that he was a load to deal with because of his size. On the other side, you got Greg Little, who again is a big guy, talented, just needs to catch the football. Had one go off his hands for an interception last week. Looks terrible for Whedon, but it was right on the money. And he has to make that catch. Because the thing is, once he makes the catch, man, is he a load to bring down. I mean, he runs violent.
Yeah.
And then you have Travis Benjamin, a young speedster they grabbed out of Miami, who I thought was one of the real good deals out of the draft. You know, kind of didn't have very good numbers at Miami, but I'll point you straight to Ja'Cory Harris for that. Very fast. He had a nice little reverse last week for 35 yards. You're not going to see Josh Cribbs a lot out as a wide receiver. He's kind of been turned back into more of a special teams demon, which is a good thing for the Browns. Last year he looked like he was a step slow on his kick returns, and I think it was because he was tired from playing wide receiver a lot. He's more dangerous as a kick cover guy. If he just focuses on special teams, he's the best special teams player in the league, bar none. And that's even not even counting his returns. But if he can be that electric return guy still, that's great. So I think you're going to see Little, Gordon, Benjamin, and Muhammad Massaquah looked far and away the best wide receiver last week. And he's a guy who has 3,000 concussions, and it's always going to be a concern going on. But you got to remember, as a rookie, he averaged something like 17, 18 yards a catch. So he does have the talent. Whedon just needs to get him the ball. And I think if we can keep Whedon up and give him some time, I think he's got some weapons on the outside that are young. It's an emerging group. It's definitely the maybe the most talented upside group that the Cleveland Browns have had at wide receiver since 99.
And what about Whedon? You know, he much has been made about his statistical struggles from last week. It sounds like, you know, one or two of those interceptions may not have been his fault if it was off somebody's hands. But, you know, how's he look? I actually was in the minority, it seemed like, in the draft process where I actually thought the kid had a pretty pretty bright future because of his age, his maturity level, and his production in college, frankly. Usually those guys that are kind of the two-sport athletes, you know, they played, I believe Whedon played professional baseball for a little while, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, with the Yankees.
So talk about maybe what you saw last week. Obviously, there's only one way to go but up for him. You know, what did you see? Were there things you liked? Was it as bad as it looked? What do you think?
Well, yeah, I don't want it to sound like I'm making excuses for his interceptions. The little one wasn't on him. The rest were god-awful. I mean, and the other thing that was discouraging was he missed a couple wide-open touchdowns. He had Alex Smith wide open for a touchdown, and he missed Bo Mass deep for a touchdown, too. So you're right. There's nowhere else it can go but up. And I'm with you. The kid's got a huge arm. I mean, we're talking an elite-level arm. He can really zing it. But the thing I liked about him coming out of school is he could make adjustments at the line. And there were a lot of routes that were, you know, check with me routes. And, you know, he made the decision right there at the line. You know, it's supposed to be a run, but he checks it to a pass right away. That's stuff that gets me excited. I give the Eagles a lot of credit. I think that defensive line is the best defensive line in pro football. And to go up against them week one, it's almost unfair. Because they brought it. And when you can rotate in, you know, Trent Cole and Daryl Tapp, and, you know, you have Fletcher Cox, the rookie, I mean, they have pass rushers hanging out their ears. So I think it was almost a little too much too soon, and I think he was jacked up. All of his throws were high last week, and I think he was just trying to do too much. That being said, it was god-awful, and there's no other way around that. He missed open guys. This week, I'm kind of hoping to see a little more. You know, I'm not trying to bash you guys by any means, but Joe Flacco looked really good. And I'm not a buyer on Joe Flacco, but he looked fantastic week one. So maybe Whedon can get back there, set his feet. And that's the most important thing with him. If he's able to set his feet and deliver, he's fantastic. But if he has to move his feet around, he doesn't like pressure up the middle. You can tell it in college. Then again, what quarterback in the world likes pressure up the middle?
Yeah.
Right. You know, all of a sudden he starts throwing off his back foot, then things start to sail and it can kind of get bad. That's where Trent Richardson comes in. Trent Richardson needs to be that hammer on first and second down. You know, if all of a sudden if it's second and short and a play action to Trent and all of a sudden Mo Mass is streaking down the sideline, you can set your feet and you can fling it. Maybe all of a sudden we get into a rhythm there. But last week he was in third and long, second and long every single time. Well, guess what? Trent Cole knows where he's going. You know, it's going to be a seven-step drop. I'm putting my ears back, and I'm coming for you. So
yeah.
It was just a tough beat, tough start. I'm not calling for Colt McCoy, and anyone who is calling for Colt McCoy needs to smack themselves in the face. But and there's a lot of people who are on the Colt bandwagon again. But we'll find out on Sunday, that's for sure.
Yeah. What are Browns fans' expectations for this club this year in terms of record, in terms of performance, in terms of you know, we've kind of talked a little bit about the strengths and weaknesses. What, just overall, you know, obviously the Browns, if you look at the power polls and all that kind of stuff, they're usually towards the bottom. From a fan's perspective and a guy like yourself who follows the team pretty intently, what do you see realistically as the expectations for, and I know it's a little bit clearer, I guess, after one game, or maybe not as clear. But what do you think overall expectations?
15-1. No. you know, I think a lot of fans would have been happy with 8 wins coming into this season. And, you know, I'm kind of right there. I was maybe a little bit lower just because I know the growing pains that the offense is going to have to go through. But I do think the defense is legit. I don't think that was an abnormality last week where they frustrated Vic big time. The defensive line pressure was a big, big thumbs up for me because that was one aspect of that defense that was really missing. When you have Hayden and Sheldon Brown and T.J. Ward back there that can really cover a lot, you know, you're buying that pass rush a couple extra seconds. If that pass rush can get there in those couple extra seconds, all of a sudden you got a fantastic defense. So the growing pains will happen this year on offense, and there's going to be – God, I hope there's not another game like the first week. I take that back because I don't know if my eyeballs can take it. It was bad. But you know what? If they can be mediocre on offense – I think this team may surprise some people, and I almost want to draw a parallel to the Bengals of last year. You know, if you can just be okay on offense and let your defense be great, all of a sudden you're a winning football team in this league, and hopefully that's what the Browns have ahead of them this year.
Okay, so let's talk about this game then. What do you expect to see out of this game? Maybe a little prediction. What do you think?
Well, all right, I'm going to go straight homer on you. I'm not going to give you the win. I think the Browns behind Trent Richardson do a nice job. I think we frustrate Dalton enough to get a turnover or two. I think the Browns win a close one, 20-17. Yourself, okay. What you got?
You know, I see this game going one of two ways. I see it going exactly the way that you're talking about. Where the Bengals just, you know, they're just not as good as a lot of people thought. And, you know, they were exposed last Monday night. And, you know, they now lost one of their best defensive players. I'm telling people whoever has Trent Richardson this week to play him. I think whether it's a big game's coming. I think whether it's, you know, a couple of goal line touchdowns and not many yards or a lot of yards. And I just see a solid game coming from him just based on that Howard injury and how they performed last week. The other part of me says, well, hey, they're going to play pissed off from how bad they got beat. And it's their home opener. And, you know, you got guys like Maluga, chiming in and talking smack, that sort of thing. So I think it's going to be pretty close. I think it's going to be probably like a 24-17, 24-20 Bengals win. But I would not be surprised if what you said came true as well.
Well, either way you cut it, I think it's going to be a good game, a nice AFC North matchup. And I think it's two evenly matched teams, and I'm not trying to put you guys down by any means. I think the Browns are a little bit better than everyone gives them credit for. So.
I do, too. I actually think the Browns are a better team than what a lot of people thought. And my brother, who's also a big Bengals guy, we've talked about it. We've said, you know, we think the Browns are going to be better than what everybody's saying. And I think we've kind of said best case scenario, we hope the Bengals kind of just split the AFC North and go 3-3, and we see that to be pretty – somewhat realistic, and you know we would not be surprised to see the Browns beat the Bengals once this year.
Anthony Cosenza from CincyJungle.com, thanks for taking the time out and talking to us. And if we both can agree on one thing, it's that the Steelers and Ravens suck.
That's right. That's
there
right.
You go. Thanks for taking time out to join us here on the Dogcast on Dogs by Nature. Go Browns!